Hello and welcome back to Clinicians Brief, the podcast, the conversations behind the content. I'm your host, Dr. Alyssa Watson, and I'm thrilled today to be sitting down again with Dr. Karen Tobias. Dr. Tobias is a regular on our podcast. The last time she was here, we actually had a great time constructing a coaptation device for elbow hygromas out of a pool noodle. Today, however, we are turning our attention to a question that is really quite topical right now, at least in the U.S., and that is, at what age should we be recommending spay and neuter in dogs? You can find the article that inspired today's conversation in the January-February 2022 edition of Clinician's Brief, and it was called Gonadectomy in Dogs, Considerations and Review. Thank you so much for joining us again today, Dr. Tobias. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me again.
So before we jump into this really hot topic, would you mind just taking a second to reintroduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. I'm a professor and a small animal soft tissue surgeon at University of Tennessee College of Veterinary Medicine.
All right. So I know everyone is really excited to talk about all this. What I'd like to kind of start out with is current practices here in the United States. So what age are most dogs neutered and what's the rationale behind those recommendations here in the US?
I think for the most part that most of the owned pets are neutered somewhere between 4 and 6 months of age. And usually the veterinarians are waiting until those animals are fully vaccinated. But at the same time, they want to do them when they're younger because their body sizes are smaller, so there's less fat and the surgery is easier and faster, and the animals have a pretty quick recovery. And then I also think it's pretty common to neuter them before puberty because people are worried about either those hormonally induced behavioral changes or for the female dogs having to deal with estrus or pregnancy.
How does that differ from other countries, particularly European countries?
Seems to be, at least from the literature and from speaking with surgeons in Europe, seems to be much more common to try and leave animals intact. They are very concerned about really the animal's welfare, and leaving the animal intact, they feel, is probably going to be best for many of these animals. And so what's interesting there is that most of the owners, because everybody else is doing it, are already learning how to either manage the reproductive or the behavioral issues that they need to deal with if they have an intact dog.
So kind of changing that mindset, you know, from the very beginning. Sometimes here in the US, especially in shelter situations, we get these really very, you know, early age gonadectomies. So what do you consider to be very early? And is there any difference between the effects of gonadectomy at a very early age versus that kind of commonly seen or recommended age of 6 months here?
I would say that probably two to three months of age is a very early time. Although the studies that were done looking at very early spays and neuters were done in 7 to 8 week old animals. So that's pretty immature, especially when you're thinking about anesthetics. And so probably the biggest thing that we can see literature-wise is there does seem to be an increased risk of urinary incontinence in the female dogs. And then there is a possibility that we could have an increased risk of fractures of the growth plate, but I don't think that that's actually been correlated by the studies. I think our problem is that the studies aren't so well done that we can say for sure that that's going to happen.
So there are some good things with gonadectomy. We know that gonadectomy can reduce or eliminate some reproductive tract diseases. And there are also some hormone-related diseases and behaviors in both females and males. So what are some benefits of ovariohysterectomy in the bitch?
I would say that since you're removing the ovaries, and whether you're talking about ovariohysterectomy or ovariectomy, where you're removing the ovaries, what you're going to do is reduce the risk of mammary tumors and you're going to prevent pyometra. Those are probably the two major issues in terms of benefit for the animal. Now, benefit for the owner is going to be a little bit different. Owners don't like to deal with the female dogs in heat. It's a messy proposition. And so taking that away makes life a little bit easier. And then they don't have to worry about trying to prevent breeding for those animals.
So you mentioned ovariectomy, but what about gonad-sparing surgeries, like ovary-sparing spays and vasectomies? What are your opinions on those?
So a gonad-sparing surgery in a female dog means that you leave in the ovaries, but you take out the fallopian tubes, the entire uterine body, and part or all of the cervix, which is quite a big surgery. And that surgery really is of no benefit to the animal itself. It's a convenient surgery for the owner so that the owner doesn't have to deal with bloody vaginal discharge in a dog that's in heat, or they don't have to worry about trying to prevent pregnancy. And then it's the same thing with vas deferens, ligation or separation, where we're really just trying to prevent unwanted pregnancies in a bitch by sterilizing the males.
And then back to the ovariectomies. So are those just as effective as ovariohysterectomy in preventing a lot of these conditions?
Yes, really the only difference between ovariectomy and ovariohysterectomy is that you're leaving the uterine body in. So the question is, do you have an increased risk of uterine tumors? And realistically, most people who do ovariohysterectomies don't take out the whole uterine body, number one. And number two, most uterine tumors are secondary to hormones from the ovaries. And so you're probably going to have the same risk of uterine tumors that you would have either way. So there really isn't any difference between the two. And if we're trying to do something with minimally invasive surgery, an ovariectomy is going to be much easier than ovariohysterectomy.
When we spay prior to a puppy's first heat cycle, we've often heard that that's recommended in order to decrease the risk of mammary tumors. One of the things that you detailed really nicely in the article is that we were actually talking about relative risk of mammary cancer, not the rate of mammary cancer. And this is a really important distinction. And I was hoping that you could go through that for our listeners.
Sure. That definitely is one of those things that I'd like to emphasize, because people think those numbers of 0.5%, 8%, 26% are the actual rates of mammary tumors that we would see. But in fact, when you're talking about relative risk, you have to take those numbers and you have to multiply them by the incidence or rate that you find in the intact females. And so roughly, if we're looking at a lifetime risk of mammary cancers in dogs, that's going to be somewhere between 25 and 35% for intact females. And so if you want to find out, let's do easy numbers. We have a mammary cancer rate of 30%. We spay a dog at 8 months of age. The relative risk is about 8%. So we have to do 8% times 30%, which means that spayed female dog's risk would be 2.4%. And so that's how we get the numbers. If you have a breed that has a much lower risk or rate of mammary tumors, then those numbers are going to be even lower. And you may not see as significant of effect just based on the pure numbers.
That's really wonderful context. And you did mention that mammary tumors also appear to be breed related. So what are some of the breeds that have an increased relative risk?
I think that probably the two most common breeds would be the American Cocker Spaniels and the English Springer Spaniels. And our difficulty with a lot of these studies is that they may not follow the dogs out for a long enough period. So most dogs will develop mammary tumors at 8 to 10 years of age. And if the study only follows the dogs for 6 years, then maybe we don't really know what the true rates are. But those two breeds particularly have a high rate of mammary tumors. Whereas you might have another breeds like Westies and Shelties and Pugs that have a very low rate of mammary cancer, at least in the studies that have been published.
So a clinician might feel a little better about leaving those breeds intact for longer.
Yes.
I was surprised that the risk for pyometra seems to be breed and age related as well. Can you talk about which breeds clinicians should be particularly concerned about for that disease?
A lot of our information is coming from these Swedish insurance studies, which follow these dogs out for years and years. And so we can't necessarily say that this is going to apply to animals in the United States. But until we have our own longevity studies published, this is probably the best we can do. And in some of those studies, they found that the rates of pyometra were 50% or more in Bernese Mountain Dogs, Bouviers, Bull Terriers, Rottweilers, Newfoundlands, Quichons. And in terms of age, they found the Dog de Bordeaux, which is a French Mastiff, they have a very early onset of pyometra. The average age was 3.3 years. And so quite a young age for those animals. And so that's something to consider. If you're going to leave them intact, you may still want to spay them before they get to that age of onset of pyometra.
Yeah, I didn't know that about Dog Day Bordeaux, and I have one. So, she's spayed and gastropexied. So, So moving on to castration, what about castration? Are there conditions that castration is protective against?
I think that it obviously prevents testicular tumors, but probably the thing that people consider the most is prostatic hyperplasia, which is going to be very common old age change that we see in these dogs and can lead to a lot of issues, whether it's constipation or even perineal hernia. And so those would be the two most common things that we would see. And then dogs that are intact males can get perianal adenomas, but you can make those go away by castrating the dog. So that might be another common condition we think about.
And then if you have a larger giant breed dog and they come in for their puppy visits and they're found to be cryptorchid, does that change your recommendation at what age to neuter them? Is it still okay to wait a little bit longer?
I think it's okay to wait. I would definitely consider neutering them because we do know they have an increased risk of testicular tumors. And in reports of testicular tumors, while most of those are going to occur in dogs that are 6 years or older, we can see them as early as 10 months of age. That's been reported. And they're going to occur earlier in dogs that are cryptorchid. And so I think it's very reasonable to wait till those dogs are a year or two old, but then you start to think about, should we go ahead and castrate them? Now, on the plus side, it's very uncommon to have metastatic testicular tumors, and the risk of paraneoplastic syndrome with testicular tumors is about 1% or even less than that. And so even development of testicular tumors usually is not something that's very significant for the dog.
Okay, so that as long as we go in there and get it out of there, we're usually going to be okay.
Yes.
The road to treatment isn't always as clear as we'd like. Having a trusted reference on hand can make a difference, especially on your busiest days. The Clinician's Brief Algorithm Collection can help quickly guide you to your most confident diagnosis. With more than 100 management trees to reference, you can navigate your ruleouts, eliminate differentials, and choose your next steps. Get the Clinician's Brief Algorithm Collection at cliniciansbrief.com/algorithms. So let's move on to some of the potential downsides of gonadectomy, because I think this is what a lot of people are really interested in, you know, the latest research. First off, when we're talking about waiting until maturity, are we talking about skeletal maturity? Are we talking about sexual maturity? Both?
I like to consider it as being musculoskeletal because I think you want to look at full bone growth and closure of your growth plates. And I also think you need to think about urethral sphincter development. So that muscle as well is pretty important in female dogs. And so once those animals are mature, then you can consider gonadectomy. I think our issue is, when are those animals skeletally mature? And when are those sphincters mature? I don't know. If I had a dog that was a pet and wet, and I walked up, and every time I walked up and said hi, it peed on me, I might wait a little longer because it's not very mature at that point.
That totally makes sense. I want to talk a little bit more about those conditions that are associated with neutering at an early age. And you said, you know, urinary incontinence is a big one. Are there some other ones?
Well, I think that the other one that we need to consider would be whether or not there's an increased risk of fractures. And unfortunately, meta-analysis or systematic reviews have shown that a lot of these studies are very weak. They're very biased in terms of how they're set up. The outcomes are really breed dependent. So we think that female incontinence is probably going to be the biggest issue that we see with these early age neuterings, but we really just don't know for sure.
And then can these conditions truly be avoided if we simply wait to neuter?
I don't believe that you could say they could totally be avoided. So if we're looking at neutering animals at the normal age in the United States, 4 to 6 months of age, versus neutering them when they're 2 years of age or 4 years of age or 1 year of age, just depending on the situation, we're still going to have risks of certain types of diseases. Now, you'll be able to prevent prostatic hyperplasia, but you may not prevent mammary tumors. So what we're hoping is to reduce the risk of a variety of these conditions, and particularly things like joint disease or certain types of cancer.
Let's talk about a little bit about how to, you know, talk with the client and advise the client. So do you have any specific points that we should discuss with clients, especially if those clients are, you know, already considering postponing or even forgoing spay or neuter, you know, based on stuff that they've heard from friends or breeders or Facebook groups or all of those types of things?
Well, first, I'd be very excited if owners were thinking about delaying spaying or neutering, because most of the time they come in and they want it done just because that's the easiest thing for them. So if they really are talking about leaving their pets intact permanently or till later in adulthood, then I would want them to start thinking about how are they going to prevent the females from becoming pregnant, the males from impregnating others. How are they going to deal with estrus? I can tell you that my female Jack Russell was in heat for about 30 days. I didn't know that it could last that long, and she was bitchy the whole time, and it drove me crazy. And I decided it was time to neuter her. Also, how can they prepare for things like hormonally induced behaviors? I think that is one of the biggest questions I actually hear from veterinarians is, oh, we need to stop the aggression in the male dogs. And so it makes me wonder, are they breeding dogs in Europe that are less aggressive, or have we just learned that you need to work more on behavioral control and training and making the animals sit and stay and just making them better citizens, so that those hormonally induced behaviors really aren't an issue? And then also the last thing would be, can the owners recognize the signs of things like pyometra or mammary tumors or prostatic hyperplasia? And that's not something you would have to bring up when the animal's a really young puppy, but you might want to think about, do we encourage more frequent visits, or do we set up some sort of program where there's an age-appropriate educational mailing or something like that, so that the owners can be updated on, here's what potentially could be happening at this age, and this is what you need to look for.
That brings up a good point, because oftentimes those puppy visits, they're already, you know, we have so many things that we're already trying to talk about, you know, parasites and then of course behavior and vaccination schedules and lifestyle and everything. And so that adds another thing into the mix. It might be, yes, a good idea to kind of space that out and start to talk about it a little bit later. What about other congenital abnormalities? You know, we had talked a little bit about cryptorchidism and when to neuter those dogs, and you're definitely in favor of neutering those dogs. What about other things like umbilical hernias? I have a puppy come in with an umbilical hernia. Does that change your recommendations either about doing the procedure at all or about the age?
I think that it's uncommon for us to have umbilical hernias where the intestine or another important organ would get entrapped or would get torsed in there. It would get a hypoxic in there. And so most of the time when we see umbilical hernias, it's just a little bit of fat in there. So I'm not as worried about the age of animals with that particular condition.
I know one thing that I see discussed a lot, you know, in Facebook groups and among other veterinarians, is that the difficulty of the procedure increases, especially when we're talking about spay, as these dogs get much bigger. And we're already talking about large and giant breed dogs, right? And so, you know, if you have a 200-pound mastiff now coming, yep, in for a spay, that's a lot different than, you know, a six-month-old puppy. And I think that it causes a lot of anxiety, you know, for practitioners, general practitioners, as surgeons. So what's your advice for that?
I totally understand the anxiety. And I think much of the anxiety has to do with the size of the incision that most practitioners expect to make. And the biggest errors that I've seen in the last 2 years for people, for veterinarians who are delaying ovarian hysterectomy on dogs, is they're attempting to make the same size incision in these big dogs. And we've seen several hemoabdomens because of that. And so you should just expect you're going to make the incision bigger. It's not like that is going to affect the dog so greatly, and another couple of inches so you can actually see what you're doing. I think that's an important thing. But the owners need to realize that the cost of the anesthetic drugs is going to be greater. The time from the veterinarian is going to be greater, and veterinarians need to charge for that expertise. The cost of the pain relievers is going to be greater. And it's so hard for people to think ahead. If you would compare the costs of delaying an ovarian hysterectomy to the cost of treating joint disease for years and years because you spayed or castrated the golden retriever or the German shepherd too young, those costs are really, really significant for that joint disease. And so it really is a balancing act of looking ahead. And if I can prevent some of these serious issues by delaying the surgery, yeah, it's going to be a little bit more expensive when I do it, but I am going to prevent the expenses that I might see from these other issues.
And can we talk a little bit about joint disease? Because we haven't talked about that yet. So let's dive into that, because that's, I think, one place where there's a lot of differing information out there.
Yeah, I think that the problem is that it's sort of scattered and spread all over the place. And again, there are no perfect studies at this point in time, but some of those studies are so dramatic. Like in the golden retrievers, if you leave a male golden retriever intact, the risk of joint disease is about 5%. And if you castrate them before 6 months of age, it's 27%. And you think about the pain and suffering, the cost of the drugs, the cost of surgeries, if you're doing total hips and TPLOs, that's just tremendous. That's unbelievable. And we'll see that same huge change if we are using German Shepherds as an example. If you gonadectomize a German Shepherd before a year of age, it's going to have a 21% risk of joint disease for the males, 16% for the females. But if you leave them intact, there's going to be a 5 to 7% risk. And so we at least want to get them out beyond that 1 year period so we can try and drop that risk of joint disease, because I just imagine how terrible it is for a 2 or 3 year old dog to wake up every morning struggling to get out of bed because their hips hurt or their knees hurt or they torn their cruciate or whatever. So I think that's a really key consideration for some of these breeds.
So beyond joint disease, what are some other, you know, complications that were, or some other conditions that we're trying to prevent by delaying spay and neuter till after skeletal maturity?
I think the Rottweiler is a really good example. And that was one that I had described in the article when you're trying to look at all of the potential risks, because if you leave those animals intact for up to about 4 years of age, the risk of bone cancer is about 7%. Whereas if you neuter them before a year of age, it's 14%. And that's got such a high mortality rate that that's so significant in terms of the lifespan and the quality of life of the animal. So if you have a Rottweiler, really the best thing to do is to leave them intact for 3 or 4 years, which is scary. A female Rottweiler, I can't imagine having that in my house, but I'm sure I could come to you as a veterinarian and you could tell me what to do.
And then where are some good places where we as clinicians can go to find, you know, a summary of some of these recommendations?
I think there are usually good review articles that come out every couple of years in the Journal of American Veterinary Medical Association. And of course, Clinicians Brief has had a couple of these articles already, but the data is going to change every year. And unfortunately, it doesn't cover all breeds. And so really, if you need the information, you have to dig for it. And we're so busy, it's pretty hard for us to do that. So maybe something where we have to encourage the owners. Here's You need to go look at the Swedish insurance studies. You need to look up and see what you can find out about your particular breed. It would be great if AKC could start keeping this information for each specific breed. So the owners could look up, oh, here's something. When it says my dog has an increased risk of mammary tumors, what does that really mean? Does that mean that it goes from 0.05% to 0.07%, or does it mean it goes from 1% to 25%? So that I know how important, how significant is this for my particular dog?
And maybe giving a little bit more onus on the owner as opposed to the veterinarian on knowing a little bit more about the dog that they're bringing home.
Yes, I could say that every time I give this talk or write a paper about this, I have veterinarians contacting me and saying, what about this breed? What about that breed? Like, well, what did you find when you looked it up? Because that's what I have to do too.
Yep, that's what we all have to do. And it sounds like we're going to be having to do it for a while.
I think so. And because our studies aren't perfect, we're going to see more and more things come out. Things may change, but I still feel like we have to take all these things into consideration. It's going to be important for folks in the United States to start considering this change.
Yeah. I think one of the things that, you know, I thought of while we were talking is local ordinances and laws. And we have an ordinance here in Las Vegas that all dogs need to be spayed or neutered by 6 months of age.
You're kidding. I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I know there are also, you know, some local ordinances in order to control pet population that might need to be updated or at least considered, you know, when we're talking with clients about these things.
Absolutely. That's a really great point.
So is this really like a paradigm shift in how we view gonadectomy here in the US? It sounds like it might be.
I think it is. I think that we have to shift the veterinarian's perspective, first of all, and then we have to consider the owner as well. There are going to be some owners who are ready to do the shift, but there will be a lot of owners who are just looking to see what's easiest. And realistically, each owner, each animal has to be taken individually, because if an owner is going to euthanize its dog, his dog, her dog, if they are going to euthanize their dog because the dog might become incontinent, that's a serious thing to consider for age of neutering. However, if that owner is not responsible enough to limit the dog when the dog's in heat, or has a male dog that becomes vicious when it reaches puberty, they can't control it, that may be another reason why we would have to consider neutering those animals earlier. So there's going to be a lot of counseling that has to be done individually, and that's really going to come up to the general practitioners.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there anything else that you wanted to, you know, tell our audience about this subject? I know everyone is so interested in it. So
I guess that there is one more thing to think about with large breed dogs in terms of delaying neutering. And that is that we don't know the right time to do prophylactic gastropexies. But I have seen a dog, it's one dog out of who knows how many, that became obstructed because the gastropexy was done by 6 months of age. And as the dog grew and the body length changed, the position of the gastropexy changed, and the dog got a gastric obstruction. The gastropexy was done properly. We had to take it down and redo it. And so if we're doing these procedures where the animals need to be in their mature condition before we permanently adhere something to something else, and gastropexy is the best one to think about, we should really wait until those animals are fully grown or almost fully grown. And so that's another reason for large breed dogs to have a delay in ovarian hysterectomy or castration and do the procedures all at one time.
That's a really good point too. I actually just had a really wonderful conversation just the other day with Dr. Fox Alvarez about gastropexy and GBV in dogs. So he said the same thing.
Excellent.
Well, that was all the questions that I had for you today about spay and neuter, although you've been on the show before, so you know that there's a few more questions for you, fun questions for you now that we're at the end. Are you ready to play Would You Rather?
I'm ready. I think I'm ready.
Okay. All right. So would you rather invent a new surgical procedure or discover a new class of analgesic drugs?
Ooh, I would rather plan a new surgical procedure because that's my interest area. I think it'd be better to find a new class of analgesic drugs, but it'd be more fun to develop a new surgical procedure.
And then they would name it after you.
Depends on what it was.
Would you rather place a catheter in a dehydrated kitten or an obese dachshund?
I think I would rather place it in an obese dachshund.
Okay. Do you like those little wrinkly legs?
Well, I would go for the jugular vein, so don't worry about it.
So would you rather practice without opioids or without local anesthetics?
I would rather practice without local anesthetics because with major procedures, we need a lot of opioids for recovery.
Would you rather redo your veterinary medical residency or redo high school?
Wait a minute. Let me think about this now. I would not want to redo high school.
I would never want to redo high school.
And think about how much I would learn the second time through my residency.
There, see? That's a very good point. All right, last question. If you could choose one as a patient, would you rather treat Gizmo from the movie Gremlins or Falcor from the movie The Neverending Story?
Is Falcor that big dragon thing?
It was.
Oh, yeah. Well, is it a down dragon? Because if I have to lift it and carry it, I better go with little Gizmo. But if it's okay and it can walk on its own, I'd go for Falcor.
Then you'd go for the dragon. That's really interesting. Yeah. I don't think he's down. I think he walks. So we'll go for the luck dragon and that'll give us good luck.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think about what would happen if I accidentally fed Gizmo after midnight or got him wet or something like that, which would probably happen.
Oh, Dr. Tobias, it's always so wonderful to talk to you. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks, I had a great time.
Thanks again to today's guest for joining us. And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review us. You can also listen to our podcast on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Clinicians Brief and on Instagram at clinicians.brief or drop us a line at podcast@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief the Podcast is a Brief Media production produced by Alexis Ussery, sound by Randall Stupka, and hosted by me, Dr. Alyssa Watson.